Hello, let me introduce myself. I'm Ann Hackman. I am an associate professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and I'm in the Department of Psychiatry. And I have been part of the RAISE Connection program since it began about 4 years ago. If we're talking about RAISE Connection, I just want to give a little bit of the significant background on schizophrenia. I think most people are aware that it's diagnosed in about 1% of the population. And typically, the age of diagnosis is somewhere between late teens and early 30s. Schizophrenia is expensive. It accounts for $65 billion a year, 25% of all hospital bed days, 40% of all long-term care days, and 20% of all Social Security benefit days. So there are huge costs financially, There are huge costs financially as well as in terms of the impact that this illness has on people's lives. People with schizophrenia tend to die younger than the general population, as much as 25 years younger. And 10% of people with schizophrenia die of suicide, most of those within the first 2 years of diagnosis of the illness. So this is an illness which has lots of costs and tremendous impact, and that kind of brings us to the RAISE program. In thinking about RAISE, we think about the course of schizophrenia, and what often happens is a picture something like this. Young person has done well in high school and goes off to college. And at some point during college, maybe in the first year when there are lots of stresses and perhaps exams that didn't go well, they may begin to develop symptoms. Sometimes those symptoms are very subtle to start out with. They stop socializing with who they usually socialize with. They may not be attending to self-care in quite the way that they usually do, so they're missing showers. During this time, they may be having other experiences as well, including psychotic symptoms. So perhaps they begin hearing voices, or they get paranoid about what's going on around them, perhaps even believing that other people are specifically plotting against them. Eventually, this comes to the attention either of family or of folks at the college or university, and very often there is a hospitalization. Sometimes this can be an involuntary hospitalization, so things have deteriorated dramatically and the person gets hospitalized against their will. This can lead to, certainly, first tremendously deteriorating school performance, often leaving school, and then there typically is a stretch when the young person and the family struggle with the illness and the changes which have occurred. Well, can he go back to school? He's already missed a semester. Maybe he should stay out longer. The stress of college was maybe too much. How do we get him back to what he was doing in his life, and is it okay for him to do that? There are issues around medications. Often young people aren't terribly excited about taking medications. Even if they are willing to take medications, it may take some significant adjustment to find medications which work for them. So there can be a period of, sometimes under good circumstances, several years lost while the person gets into optimal treatment, while symptoms get well controlled. And then you've hit a point where, wow, the person started college with people who are now graduated and off in jobs, and it can be difficult to reconnect with life. And that is specifically where the RAISE program comes in. This brings us to the RAISE Connection program. RAISE stands for Recovery After Initial Schizophrenia Episode, and that first letter for initial is actually the number one because it's also the first schizophrenia episode. RAISE began, and particularly the Baltimore Connection piece of RAISE began, as part of a multi-centered NIMH-funded study to look at early interventions with young people with psychotic illness. This is an early intervention program based on a critical time intervention. So critical time intervention means that we do something in a relatively brief time period to help people transition during a certain period, rather than RAISE being a lifelong treatment approach. RAISE is a person-centered, recovery-based program that's designed to assist individuals in moving forwards and working towards their identified goals. So it's set up to provide education and support to individuals and their families, and there are a number of components to RAISE that I'll talk about in a minute. There are many elements to RAISE, and we'll cover some of those. It is team-based. As I said, it's grounded in critical time intervention model, and RAISE is set up as a 2-year program. There's an emphasis on outreach and engagement. So one of the things that happens often with young people early on in the onset of a psychotic illness is they get discharged from the hospital, they have an appointment set up. They don't want to go to an appointment and see a psychiatrist outside the hospital. They're still not sure that they have an illness, and they may miss that first appointment and then have great difficulty getting another one scheduled or not want to get another one scheduled. With RAISE's emphasis on outreach and engagement, we'll call them and remind them about that first appointment. If they miss it, we'll call them again and set up something else. If they continue to miss it, we may even go out to their house and try to make that first engagement there. Shared decision-making is the foundation of all treatment decisions in the RAISE program. So typically in much medical treatment, people go to a doctor and the doctor says, you need to take this medication. It will treat your illness. That's true if we go to the primary care doctor for antibiotics or something else. Here, take this. In RAISE, with decisions around medication and around treatment, the individual receiving the treatment is directly involved in the process. So there may be lots of discussion of different medications that might be considered, of what might happen if you don't take medications, of the risks and benefits one way and another. We provide lots of educational materials, lots of handouts, and decision making really is shared. So if someone says, I'm not going to take medication, I, as the psychiatrist, don't say, well, then you're out of my program. I don't want to treat you if you're not going to take medication. I say, okay, let's discuss that. Let's figure out if there are things that would happen that might change your mind around taking medications. And let's have you come in really frequently so we can see how things are going. The RAISE program is based in a clinic, but it's separated as much as possible from the services for more chronically psychiatrically ill individuals. So our program is set up in its own space, kind of across from the clinic, and we do a lot of things to make it as user-friendly as possible. There are snacks and water bottles, and we sit around a table rather than with a treatment provider meeting somebody from behind a desk. As our RAISE Connection team exists currently, we have a team leader who's a full-time clinician, 3/10 of a psychiatrist, which is 12 hours a week of psychiatrist time. There is a full-time supported education and employment specialist and a full-time recovery specialist. At present, we have a capacity for 30 participants in the program. Some of this may be subject to change over time or addition of other sites. However, one of the things that certainly we know is important is maintaining this kind of a clinician to participant ratio. So there's a lot of time that people can spend with the participants in our program. Our current admission criteria is that we take people between the ages of 15 and 30 who are diagnosed with schizophrenia spectrum disorders, and that would be the DSM-5 diagnosis. They need to have had at least one symptom of psychosis at some time during the current episode or during a recent episode if the person has now recovered. And we need to be seeing people within the first 2 years since the first onset of psychotic symptoms. Exclusion criteria include serious intellectual disabilities and autism spectrum disorders. So our team, described who's on the team, I want to talk a little bit about what they do. The team leader is the overall coordinator of services for each of the clients in the program. The team leader provides some individual therapy, does a great deal of case management with assistance certainly from the recovery coach and from the employment education specialist. The team leader heads things around crisis intervention, does a great deal of the information gathering, and is usually taking the lead with safety planning for the clients that we work with. The recovery coach provides social skills training, does a weekly participant group, a monthly family group, and works with the employment education specialist around school coordination. Our recovery coach currently also provides some therapy and some additional case management services and backs up the team leader in being sure that everybody has adequate services. The employment education specialist is a particularly wonderful part of the RAISE team. The employment education specialist is responsible for job development, addressing work and school related goals, and dealing with problems in those areas that come up. So she spends a great deal of time working with people around filling out job applications. She works with the recovery coach in preparing people to do job interviews, how to dress for a job interview, how to present yourself, what kinds of things you should say, what to discuss, what not to discuss about your psychiatric diagnosis, because people, of course, make very individual decisions about that and can often use coaching so that they understand that they don't have to come in and say, well, I left my last job 3 months ago because I was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. That's not something that employers necessarily need to know, although different of our clients have made different choices around all of that. The psychiatrist, of course, is responsible for prescribing, is in charge of shared decision-making, particularly around it, anything medication-related, and is very much involved with education for our clients and for their families around the illness, around medications, and around other kinds of coping skills that assist people in moving things forward in life, even when medications don't work perfectly, which happens sometimes. We often meet with clients as a team, so with several members of the team sitting down with a client, sometimes with the client's family or some members of the client's family as well, and working as a team, hearing the same things, discussing medications together, everybody sharing information, and making it clear to the client and the family that they're not simply working with a psychiatrist here and a therapist there, but that this is a whole team approach to help the person that we're treating get things moving and get life back on track. Some of our key elements in what we've done with the RAISE program and some of the things that were part of the program from the beginning of the research include regular meetings between the participants and the teams. And these were very specifically prescribed in the original research piece, and we've continued with this approach now that the NIMH-funded research is finished. For the first month that we're meeting with someone, we see them at least weekly. For the next 6 months, we see them every other week. Now, there can be some flexibility around all of this. If somebody misses an appointment in the first month, we're hardly going to end services, but we're going to try very hard to figure out what we can do to get them in and get them seen. If someone needs to be seen weekly, 3 months in, then we certainly can adjust and do that. Occasionally, we'll have people who are seen a couple of times a week during a period of crisis. And then there's also lots of telephone contact, as well as sometimes emails, text messages to our RAISE on-call phone, and various other approaches to communication. We strongly encourage family involvement. There certainly is good data that indicates that family involvement is helpful in terms of outcomes with people with schizophrenia. And we've actually been very successful in having great family involvement, ranging from family members who've come in occasionally or come to a family group occasionally, to families who come in every week with their late teenager or young adult. We provide lots of psychoeducation. There are tremendous misconceptions around mental illness, particularly around schizophrenia. If you spend much time with the popular media, you'll certainly get all kinds of ideas that are wrong, ranging from the idea that schizophrenia is split personality or dissociative identity disorder to the idea that there's a huge likelihood that people with schizophrenia might commit violent crimes. People need to know what the actual facts are, which are none of those things that I just described, to learn about the course of the illness, to understand what it means and what it doesn't mean, and then to work with people individually around what's going to work for them. Stigma is a huge issue with mental illness in general, and particularly with schizophrenia. Often the young people that we work with and or their families are very reluctant to tell anyone that someone has been diagnosed with schizophrenia. So where if someone's child were diagnosed with cancer, they might be getting lots of support from their church group or from their workplace or in other social settings. If their child has been hospitalized with a psychotic episode, they may not be telling people who are around them because there's huge stigma. And what does this mean? And so addressing stigma, helping our clients and their families to deal with the associated stigma is a very important piece of what we try to do with RAISE. RAISE has a recovery focus. In psychiatry for decades, there was very much an illness focus and a symptom focus. So what symptoms are you having? Well, you better not do this and that and the next thing, and let's focus on your medications. A recovery focus says that we want to figure out what we can do to help people move their lives forward. So we want to know what your symptoms are, but more importantly, we want to know what your goals are. You want to go to nursing school? Right now you're having difficulty dealing with your high school classes because medications have not been effective in dealing with your auditory hallucinations. Okay, let's focus on that recovery goal. Let's see what we can do to help you today and in the here and now. But we believe that you can go to nursing school if you want to do that. And we're going to work with you, and we're going to figure out what steps you can take. And maybe even though school's a struggle at the moment, you might do very well with a volunteer job at a hospital where there are some things that you're doing there. And you may be able to focus differently, and that may really help you feel like you're taking steps towards your ultimate goal. Flexibility is key in the RAISE Connection program. Often people have very set hours, and you know, you can see your psychiatrist between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock on Tuesday, and that's the only option. Well, if you're 18, life doesn't always work that way. There may be other things that you're doing and other things that are going on, so we try to have evening hours available, to be flexible around which day we can see people, and to really work around their schedules and try to make it as user-friendly as it can possibly be. We also have 24-hour phone availability. Either the recovery coach or the team leader has a cell phone that's the team phone that they have with them 24/7, and they trade off, and then the psychiatrist is always available for backup. This is supposed to be for emergencies and more acute situations, although occasionally there will be a text message to the on-call phone that says, "What are you doing tonight?" or something like that. And the team leader will quickly respond and say, "Well, I'm at home. How about you? What's going on?" And you know, you'll hear that somebody's at a party or, "Oops, meant to text my girlfriend," or whatever else. But we're available for backup in urgent situations. There have been instances when we've gone out after hours to help clients and families deal with crisis situations. That's not a daily part of what we do, but it's part of what we do when we feel that, like, that's the only way to kind of get needs met and avert a crisis getting worse. So we like to be very available and flexible and looking positively at what can happen in the future. We have participant groups. So there's a group where participants come in and often deal with some social skills kinds of things. If you've been in the hospital for a while and you're just going back to school, what do you say to people? How do you deal with the fact that you've been away? They're going to ask, "How come you were out?" What can you say? Do you want to tell them the whole story? And some of our clients do. Or do you want to give a bit more of a vague answer that isn't lying, but makes it clear that you were out for personal reasons, you were sick, and you're better now. We have family groups that are also psychoeducational in nature. We talk about a variety of things around schizophrenia, around medications that can get used, around resources, around non-medication approaches to treatment. And families have a time when they can come together and share some experience. It's not a family therapy group, but it can be useful for someone whose child is now doing quite well to talk to someone who's new to the program where there are certainly struggles. There have been times when families came in and were able to share with each other, I was so angry when we first came to this program. My son had had really bad experiences in hospitalizations and in mental health treatment, and I spent the first session just yelling at the RAISE team about how miserable things had been. But they've helped, and things are better now. And hearing that, if you're just coming into the program, can be really useful. We certainly do lots of individual sessions with our clients or sessions with our clients and their families. We do facilitate some interface between participants, so we've occasionally, with everybody agreeing to it, introduced one of our participants to another who's dealt with or has previously dealt with similar issues. I've mentioned our on-call component, and it's interesting in the 21st century dealing with friend requests from our RAISE clients on Facebook, and you know what happens when you get interesting texts that really weren't meant for you, and sorting some of those things out. But we try to kind of keep current with 21st century technology because that's where many of our clients are. Some of our additional key elements, I've mentioned shared decision making. This typically includes client and family, and shared decision making involves frank, fully informed discussion and lots of questions. So if I'm recommending a medication, I may well give people a handout on the medication and say, take this home, look at it. Go look it up on the internet if that's what you want to do. Come back with questions. I'll answer them as long as you have them. And if I don't know the answer, we'll go figure it out together, or I'll consult someone who's got a broader knowledge base than I do. We have certain preferred antipsychotics that we try to use in the program. For some of our clients, long-acting injectable medications or LAIs are very helpful. So some of the antipsychotics come in a long-acting injectable form, and I've occasionally encountered young people who said, give me the shot, because then no one in my dorm room sees any pills or knows that I'm on a long-acting injectable medication. We use some of the newer antipsychotics, aripiprazole, risperidone, and some of the older ones, profenazine and loxapine. And we can prescribe outside of these recommended medications, but going into the research piece of the program, there was a lot of thought given to what might work best rather than pick from any antipsychotic out there. Start with these and see how far we get. So we're very clear with our clients that we're not experimenting on them, but we don't yet have the knowledge base and genetic expertise and everything else that I think we'll have a decade or so down the road, and I don't know what medication is going to work perfectly for any given client. So you're not a guinea pig, but we are in this together in terms of figuring out what's going to work best for you. We continue to have discipline-specific expert consultations, so I often consult with one of the psychiatrists who knows more about psychopharmacology than I think anyone on the planet, who is at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center. We have other expert consultation available to us within the early intervention program. And we've had unique access to some materials from the National Empowerment Center and from some experts who have really done a lot to generate consumer-friendly materials that are going to be particularly useful for young people. One key element that I want to really underscore is safety planning. We do safety planning with all of our clients. Certainly, there are concerns around risk of dangerousness to self or to others. I've mentioned a high suicide rate. Certainly, the possibility of dangerousness to others exists, although data indicates that it's much less than the media would sometimes have us believe. People with schizophrenia are much more likely to be victims of violence than the general population. There's a much higher rate of people with schizophrenia spectrum illnesses being victims of crimes. And I've talked about the suicide rate. Most violent acts are committed by people who do not have major mental illnesses or schizophrenia spectrum diagnoses. However, when symptoms are untreated, when people are actively psychotic, and particularly if there is co-occurring substance use, there is some increase in risk of dangerousness. So we're very much aware of this and put it out there to discuss with our clients and their families. And safety plans are documents which we regularly review and revise. We like to think of them as sort of a living document where we sit down with our client, and the client agrees with family, we identify things that are known stressors that seem to have triggered psychotic symptoms in the past. We want to look at what warning signs are. So one of our clients can say, yeah, when I stop sleeping well at night, if it goes a couple nights when I'm not sleeping, I know something might be wrong and maybe we need to do something else with my medication, because what happens is I stop sleeping well, then I become more and more hyper-focused on things, and then it slides into my becoming delusional, and then I end up back in the hospital, and I don't want that to happen. So if I'm not sleeping well for a couple nights in a row, I'm gonna call you. We also work around techniques which the client and family can use to deal with symptoms and stressors. So things like mindfulness, relaxation techniques, things that may be individual to various clients, listening to music, listening to certain kinds of music. Exercise is often a good one. But people can find things that work for them. It might be drawing, it might be cooking, it might be, you know, specific kinds of sporting activities. What works for any given person to help relieve stress? One of our young women finds the manicure pedicure stress relieving approach to be very helpful. We want to look proactively for steps that the client and family can take if things get worse. Certainly one of those is often contacting the RAISE team. Can we get you in here sooner? Having medication that they might take specifically in an emergency. Let us know, but we're going to give you some additional medication that you may take if things suddenly get bad quickly. We like to have an emergency plan in place so that if it reaches an emergency state where our client or the client's family feels that a hospitalization is maybe going to be needed or an emergency room visit is needed, we kind of figure out how that's going to happen. So that might include talking with the mom about who she can call in to take care of the other children while she and dad take the 17-year-old to the hospital, and which hospital they're going to want to go to and what hospitals we are most likely to be able to have some influence in what happens and what's the logical thing that's going to be the least stressful, because hospitalizations and particularly emergency hospitalizations can be extremely stressful and traumatic for clients and for their families, and we'd like to minimize that trauma. So there are a variety of ways in which to do that and to plan things out ahead of time so that if a crisis occurs, everybody knows this is the plan and this is plan B and this is how we can help you address it. With our program currently, we've had over 40 participants since we started about 4 years ago. They are across our age spectrum from 15 to 35. About two-thirds of the people who have received services from us have been men and about one-third women. And they've had some co-occurring diagnoses, including various kinds of substance use and substance dependence. We've seen people who've also had some personality diagnoses and certainly people who've had some cognitive limitations. We've made lots of observations over the time that we've been providing RAISE Connection services. Treatment is very much focused on recovery and the recovery process, that development and pursuit of recovery goals, and often this is different than what people have experienced previously. So we're often looking at breaking goals down into smaller objectives. I want to get my driver's license. Okay, great. So what do you need to do that? Well, first you need to get a learner's permit. Okay, have you looked at that learner's permit test online? No. All right, so the first step to getting your driver's license might be figuring out what you have to do to get a learner's permit, and we can sit with you and help you figure that out. So the I want to get a driver's license goal may be down the road, but the learner's permit may be a lot more accessible. We also want to identify and address barriers to these goals. So for some of our clients, well, I want to get a learner's permit, but it costs some money and I don't have that money. So how can we help you thinking about budgeting and saving? With medication, I've talked about shared decision making with all participants. People do a variety of different things with medications. I ask that they at least let me know what they're doing. So if they're not taking medication, then for heaven's sakes, tell me you're not taking it, and then at least we're on the same page and we can figure that out together. We have some clients who've declined medications and actually, in the absence of medications, have done pretty well and had long periods symptom-free. Medication responses are also very variable. So we've had young people who've had symptoms that virtually disappeared completely with medications, and others who, despite really good adherence with medications, their symptoms have proven treatment refractory to medications. And then we're working with them around what else can they do to help manage life, help deal with symptoms, and help move things forward. One of the things that to me is most exciting about our work so far is that we've had a better than 90% retention rate, which is, I understand, kind of amazing in this population group. With 100% of the individuals that we've worked with, we've had face-to-face contact with their families, and this has ranged from very intensive to relatively minimal, and certainly when there have been negative experiences that people have had, especially prior to coming to treatment, we spend a lot of time processing those with families. We kept, of the individuals in our piece of the program, 27 of 29 of the individuals who came to us during the 2 years of the research remained engaged with clinical services, and I very recently received some findings from the larger RAISE study, which also included a site in New York. So ratings of occupational functioning improved for clients with each month that they spent in the program. The odds of working or going to school increased with each month spent in the program. The odds of remission of symptoms increased with each month in the follow-up from baseline to 6 months. So we expected symptoms to get better in those first 6 months, and they did. And then, optimally, symptoms were very well controlled and we could continue to work on other things. On average, symptoms decreased every month that people spent in the program. So seems like this had some benefits for the people involved with it. The team set out to address individual and family concerns, to engage with both clients and families, and often with young people who may not believe that they have any kind of illness in the first place, engagement can be a challenge. We wanted to be user-friendly with scheduling and availability. We wanted to provide state-of-the-art care around medications and around non-medication treatments with therapeutic approaches. We certainly addressed the issue of dual diagnosis, so many of the individuals that we work with did have co-occurring substance use issues. We are happy to work with folks who have co-occurring substance use issues. I have some additional expertise in addictions, and we spend lots of time addressing those and using motivational interviewing and other kinds of techniques to help people around substance use issues and the interface between substance use and psychiatric illness. We also certainly worked very hard to work objectively with multiple systems ranging from hospitals to schools and colleges to employers to, in some instances, the judicial system. And finally, I think we found this to be very challenging but very interesting work. There will be more formal outcomes from this project, the research piece of the project, out soon. From a clinician perspective, the work has been very promising. And I know that from our program, we had 3 high school graduations last year. We're on track for 2 more this year. We've had 1 college graduation and lots of jobs. And it's been exciting so far, and I think will be very useful for people moving forward.